Have you walked the Camino de Santiago? If you can answer yes to that question, then I would love to hear from you so I can interview you for the podcast. As a thank you, I'll send you a copy of my international best-selling Camino de Santiago memoir, The Only Way is West. And it has 396 ratings, and that is with 88% of positive reviews on Amazon. One such review goes a little something like this from L. Clark, who puts the title as amazing. And he wrote, or she wrote, or they wrote, not my normal kind of book, but I absolutely loved every second of this book. It's very funny, honest, and in a way, it is a love story of a man falling in love with following his dream of walking the Camino. I must admit, I'm not the quickest reader. I read a page, normally not off to sleep, but I managed to get a good 8 to 10 pages at a time with this book. It had me gripped. Definitely worth a read. So, if you have walked the Camino and would like a book that is definitely worth a read, as L. Clark says, then get in contact. We'll interview you and you'll get a copy of The Only Way is West. With no further ado, it is time for me to stop banging on about my book, because as I've said before, we've got to pay the bill somehow, huh? Let's get into this week's podcast with the lovely Betsy Rossin. It's the searchers I see, the wisdom that they speak, the lessons that they teach, just a Hello there once again, fellow peregrinos. Welcome to El Camino de Santiago Pilgrims Podcast, where we talk about planning, preparation, packing, all things for walking and preparing for getting you to Santiago safely and also having the time of your life along the way. This week, we are talking to another American pilgrim, Betsy. It's lovely to meet you.
Great to be here, Bradley. Thank you.
And just to pronounce your last name for me, it's Betsy.
It's Rossin.
Rossin. Okay, I just had to get it right. I didn't know if it's Rossin or some kind of other different kind of nuance to it. So, Betsy Rossin. So, tell us, which Camino did you walk?
The Portuguese, the coastal.
Portuguese coastal, beautiful. And a little birdie tells me that you did it with someone called Monica.
That is correct.
And if you go back to the last episode, you will hear that episode and that interview, very entertaining episode with Monica as well. So you were actually, I think, the inspiration for Monica to walk the Camino. But first of all, we're going to kind of kick off with the question we always like to ask. And that is, when you go to the pilgrim office in Santiago and they will ask you, what was your motive for walking the Camino? Was it religious? Was it some other? What did you say? What did you tick? Which box did you tick?
Okay, I did it for spiritual and other reasons. That is the box that I ticked.
Okay, would you like to elaborate a little bit more upon that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just felt like it wasn't, you know, one specific sort of dogmatic type of religion, but more spiritual. And then in terms of in my life, I was coming to a point where I had decided to recently retire. And so I was just having a lot of sort of life transitions at the same time and sort of rethinking, what did I want? And I thought, wow, what is more perfect than being on the Camino, you know?
I think that's a really, really good question to ask ourselves as well. And to focus on what we want rather than what we don't want. I think some of us can be quite maybe subconsciously thinking, well, we don't want this, we don't want that. So did you manage to come to some kind of realization while you're on the Camino, what you wanted? You don't have to tell us right now, but did it help you with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, basically, when I went into the Camino, I was having a 60th birthday. It just sort of happened that way because we had to postpone our trip because of COVID. And when I had my birthday, I said, you know, I wish for myself to have gratitude for the things that I have and that I also don't have. right? For what is. And as I was on the Camino, I don't know, it's just so much reinforcing of everything.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. That way of approaching things, gratitude for the things you have, which I think is, you know, we all had to have that chat with ourselves during COVID and are still having to it to some extent. And for the things you don't have, that's really interesting. What gratitude for the things that you don't have. What do you mean by that? Give us an example.
Well, I know how sometimes you'll say like, wow, you know, if I had, let's say in my career, if this had happened to me, then I would have gone in that direction and that would have been awesome, but that didn't happen. So I mean, I went in a different direction and ultimately that was the best possible scenario for me. But you know, you don't know it at the time. At the time you're like, wow, you know, I saw this going a little bit different way. I mean, you know what, I've had a really great career, but also I should mention that as of tomorrow, a year ago, I fell in my house and I broke my arm, my dominant wrist, very badly. And so that also, having like surgery right away with plates and screws, it really makes you think about, that helps you kind of focus where you are and, you know, what you want to do with your life. So those sorts of things sort of happening. Yeah.
So this was before the Camino that happened, right?
It was after we planned the Camino, but with the Camino being pushed off, cause we were supposed to go, not this past April, but the April prior. Right.
Yeah.
So it would have been, yeah. So.
So in some ways on the Camino, you were still under some form of rehabilitation, I assume?
Actually, it was completely healed.
Great.
Because we haven't been back for very long, really. Let's see, not even a month, which seems crazy to me. Like, you know, when I first got back, we were checking in with each other, like, you know, how you doing? How you doing? You know, because I've heard a lot about people, you know, feeling kind of, you know, a little saddened that it's over, right? And getting back to regular life. Now, I was only on the Camino for a week, but I know that at the end, and I heard other pilgrims saying this, you felt like you wish that you kind of wanted it to keep going, right? And I can see how people kind of say, yes, I'll carry on to Finisterre, right? You know, or wherever, or keep going. But so my plan is to do another trip, another Camino.
Okay, so this Camino Portuguese was a bit of a taster for it. Okay, so let's talk some practicalities of it, because sure. Now you say you're going to go back. Now the big question is, if as well as your clothes, backpack, shoes, and phone, you could only take one other thing with you when you go back, what's that most important thing? What would it be?
Well, I did have one little thing that was helpful that I didn't realize was going to be so helpful. Actually, I had two things, but one was I had a leash on my sunglasses, and that leash was really helpful the way that, you know, allowed me to be more hands-free with taking my sunglasses on and off, because you go, at least where we went, there was shade, then there was sun, you know, that kind of thing, so... I like that. I use that a lot. And then I also had, you know, it seemed like you were always, especially, we were always whipping out our passports, right? Because I went to, you know, between going to Portugal and then Spain, blah, blah, blah. So we're whipping out our passports, left, right? And I had a thing, do you know what a stasher bag is? It's a silicone reusable, resealable bag. Anyway, they make one that has a hook on it and it'll fit my passport in there very nicely. And it was attached to my my backpack on the inside. So I didn't feel like I had to do like a deep dive for that every time. So that's it.
Yeah, that's actually two really good recommendations there. The leash on the glasses, that's actually really, really good one, because obviously it's all pretty much always sunny. So the glasses are a must. You must have the sunglasses. And yeah,
it was helpful. Yeah.
You do. Yeah. That's a really good point, because I remember times when I would lean over to get things or drink and my sunglasses would fall off my head. So it's like, actually, just take them off and have them around your neck. That's actually a tip we've never heard before. Fantastic. And I'm a little bit... this is a groundbreaking interview, Betsy. Groundbreaking. They're so simple, but so effective. And the other one, I don't actually know what that is.
Oh, we have to look it up. It's on
What's
Amazon.
What's it called?
They're called Stasher Bags.
Stasher Bags.
S-T-A-S-H-E-R. And they're made of all silicone. So, you know... It's funny because, like, I know whatever years ago I'm packing lunches and stuff, and you got your Ziploc bags, and that plastic is being thrown out every day. It's such a waste. Well, these silicone bags, they're you can put them in the dishwasher and they just seal, and they're fantastic.
Just like an environmentally friendly Ziploc bag. In a way.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And you can use them, but they're food safe. But I tend to, they're also kind of nice to use for organizational things as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Love them keeping valuables in by the sounds of it. So yeah, brilliant. There's some really, really good tips there. Thank you very much for that, Betsy. You've just retired, I guess. You're having these existential dilemmas and that's kind of hard. And, you know, it's very interesting to think, most people think by the time you retire that you've got life sussed out in a way, I guess. But isn't it interesting that even when you get to that retirement age and you think, oh, well, you know, life is you're a lady of leisure now. But even then, they're still having existential dilemmas, you know. So it's very interesting, very interesting to hear that.
What I did was I decided that I was going to transition into being an artist, because I realized that, I was longing to just work on my art when I was at home. Mm. And that is what I've been doing. It will probably be a hobby. I don't see, this necessarily becoming something that I'm trying to make money off of, but it's something that I really enjoy. And that I'm doing, and so it's just very rewarding for me, and I'm grateful to have the time to do it, to also also to do things for, it's nice to be able to make someone a meal that is just like one of my sister-in-law was having surgery, and to be able to make her a meal without thinking, okay, being in a real strict routine, right? It's not like, oh golly, I got to schedule that in, right? So I hope I never have everything all sussed out, because I feel like that's part of the journey. I don't expect that to happen. I think it's an evolution. So
that it's nice to hear. It's nice to hear that that it's actually okay. Yeah, not to have life sussed out, and that is part of, I guess, the reason to keep going, isn't it? Like, you've never arrived. We can always improve and always learn, no matter what stage of life we're at. So yeah, that's what I take from what you're saying. And now you're able to kind of work on one of your hobbies, which is art. And I think along the Camino, did you find any inspiration for that?
Oh gosh. Well, there was such beauty everywhere. It blew my mind. Okay. My mind was just blown how beautiful it was. And especially, I have a few images, a few photographs that I took. I'm like, I am so in my happy place right now. And at one point I just felt this overwhelming sense of joy and contentment. I don't know if I was exhausted that day or what,
Talk us through that moment. Where were you, and what was the weather like, and who were you with, and why did you feel that way? What contributed to that?
I don't know. Well, I think that it seemed like there were a lot of little. Well, first of all, I felt like, wow, I can do this, first of all. And I think one of the things that I gained from the Camino was having a lot of self-confidence. I've traveled a good bit in my day, but I never had the complexity of superimposing COVID on that situation. So the things like when, you had to jump through a few hoops, PCR tests and QR codes and, a form here and a form there and, just things like that. And then once we were actually on the Camino, finding our way, because in some areas it's super obvious where you're going. Yellow arrow, there we go, right? And I know that in the beginning of towns and in the end of towns, we had lost a bunch. And I think that it's hard. You can't, if I next time I do it, I think I might print out, once I'm in like a medieval town, a map of that area, if I can get one, that's very specific, because you can't use Google Maps in like a medieval town, because it gets very confused. It'll be like, we look at each other and we're like, I think we've circled this 6 times. And this was our big day. We were going 16 miles, so you're like pretty tired right now. Like to find where we're going, right? So, but having the confidence of getting through that and being like, okay, yeah, it was a challenge at the time, but we did it, we made it.
There were so many obstacles to get onto the Camino until very recently, right. With, like you said, the QR codes and the tests, proof of vaccination status, right. et cetera.
Exactly. Yeah. And most of it wasn't that hard, but it did get to be, like if you're standing in line at the airport trying to pull up a code, you're just like, I hope my phone doesn't die right now, or what I'm saying. But I think I think the Camino also taught me a lot of patience, having to wait to go, which was actually much better, because we were able to see the Camino after it had been the cathedral after it had been completely finished, all the preservation rehabilitation work that they did on that building. So what a fortunate outcome for us. So,
and why did you choose the Camino Portuguese route as opposed to some of the others?
Right, well, I leaned on Monica in that particular thing, because she actually had friends that had gone before, and her friends had talked about the benefits of one versus the other. And so we leaned on that. And then basically we went through a group called Camino Ways. And that group, we had a very good experience with them. They basically just, organized the trip and then also our luggage transfer each day. But she had basically had new people that had done that and had done other ones and had talked to them about what we would like. So she and her husband went a week before my friend and I went and met them. And so I felt like Monica was like, I'm trying to think of the correct phrase, Bradley, to tell you this, but like in a military operation, you have a team that goes ahead and they'll report back, I don't know. I saw a lot of squirrels. I don't know what they'd say, no bread lines. I don't know. But anyway, so she would be like, it's hot, wear shorts, bring shorts, it's quite warm. You'll need whatever. So I felt like they were our scouts or something.
Your eyes and ears.
Yeah. Yeah.
They performed some reconnaissance in a way.
Recon. Yes. That's our recon team.
Yeah.
So that was helpful, actually, because there were a few things. I mean, when I was looking at the weather, I thought it was going to be chillier, and it wasn't, which it was beautiful. After the first, we could not have asked for a better weather. When I do it again, I like those shoulder seasons myself. So
it's the Camino Ways. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they also have a podcast, the Camino Ways. I could be mistaken there, but there
I'm not sure what makes sense that would be them, but that is the name of the company, and they do a lot of they have, you know, they work with you on different tours and stuff like that. So but we did have a good experience, and we did, you know, it's interesting, like the hotels, you can pick, I guess, from different levels or whatever. But I found that, you know, we would be in some modest places and then a couple of really pretty darn fancy places. I'm like, wow. So it was just an interesting mix that I don't think that if I went on booking, I could have ever in a million years figured out, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. They've got the inside info. So yeah, that's good. So Camino's Ways, they sound like a good option if you're looking for some guides as well. So we talk about a highest moment. I mean, we all know that along the way to Santiago, whether you're going for a week or whether you're going for a month, that there's some hard times. And I often find those harder times often happen in the first week as your body makes the physical adjustments. What would you say was the most challenging moment for you on your Camino, and how did you get through it, and what advice, what lesson could you give to others?
So it was the first day, and it was also going to be our hardest day. It was the 16 miler, and I had, you know, I listened to your podcast, and I had listened to,
You broke the rules. You're supposed to break yourself in, but you did the hardest down the first day, Betsy.
Well, that's how Monica had her set. And then I was like, okay, my friend and I are going to meet you and segue into the trip. My trip morphed so many times because at one point it was going to be my husband and I going to Lisbon for a week. Then it was going to be the whole family going to Lisbon for a week. And then me joining my other friend and us going to start. So and then things looked dodgy with COVID again. And so, my kids and my husband were like, you know, I just can't risk it, right? With getting quarantined. I'm like, well, you know, I can think of worse places for me to be quarantined. But anyway, so that's how it, so I ended up going without them. So anyway, so the trip had morphed. And so Monica was already there. And I feel like I've circled around that question. Riley, can you repeat that for me?
Yeah, of course. Of course. That's all right.
I went around in a circle and now I'm like, I don't think I answered.
Where am I?
The hardest day. Yes.
There
okay.
Sorry. Hardest moment. Yeah.
Okay. So because of that, Monica had a rest day. And then we started on this, the first day for my friend and I. And with that, you know, I knew, like, don't do a rookie move. Don't buy a new pair of shoes that you haven't worn. Don't do that, right? That was good. I was solid with that. But after, I mean, because we were getting lost and stuff, it was probably, it was probably about mile 16. I thought, I'm feeling a hot spot. It's not good, right? So fortunately, I had packed in my little day pack a pair of like river shoes, you know, like Tevas. They're fully supported, like water sandals, strap around on you. And I got those out, and I think I did it in the nick of time. And then so that's that. Like, okay, I sensed that I needed to, you know, change shoes. We stopped, I changed shoes, and I pressed on. But at some point you're kind of like, well, there's really not a lot of choice here. We need to get to our destination. And I guess if you were desperate, you know, you could take a taxi. We didn't want to do anything like that, you know, kind of, you know, not being true to the spirit of the Camino, especially on the first day. That'd be extra terrible. But so we just powered through. And I think part of it at the end is not only you're tired, but you're hungry again, you know, and that's when you feel a little cranky. Not too bad.
So it was kind of just the general growing pains of your first day on the road and acclimatizing.
Yeah, I will say that my shoulders were pretty darn sore the first day. Like my whole body was great. You know, I felt those hot spots on my feet, but my shoulders, you know, there's really nothing that could be done about that. You know, I didn't have a heavy backpack at all, but I felt like during the next few days, I was like, I don't see any signs of rain in the forecast. I'm not going to take my poncho. So I was really trying to keep it as light as possible with the recognition that, you know, my shoulders were not, feeling some pain. And actually after 2 days, I was fine. I had no ailments. I put, in terms of my feet, I had brought a couple of, one was a Dr. Scholl's like gel thing, like a little Band-Aid, put that on. And the next, and also I had a couple of those. And then I also used like a moleskin kind of thing. And it just took the pressure off and I was fine.
So you've given some advice there. What's the best advice you heard or read when you were preparing for your Camino?
I would say, you know, don't take more than you need was certainly one that I heard consistently, that people, you know, would constantly take too much. Don't do it.
Yeah, and obviously that comes through trial and error before, and you know how much time you spend training, and mentioned there, like your shoulders were hurting, and that is also part of your training, like putting your backpack on, walking with your backpack like it would be like you would be on the Camino, and you're not only listening to your feet, but you're also listening to your shoulders, you listen to your hips, and sometimes you've got to break your backpack in as well, because you never know where those sore spots are going to be on your backpack, how well it sits on your back. So yeah, that's all stuff that what I'm taking is your reiterating previous advice, you know, that's really, really useful and should never be underestimated. So that's great. Now, what surprised you most about yourself and what surprised you most about the Camino?
Let me see if I jotted anything down. Any thoughts here?
You can just freestyle if you want to.
Yeah.
So you sound like you're pretty good at that.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. Okay. So this is actually funny in retrospect. So when we left, I thought, oh, gosh, you know, because I was sharing a room with my friend. And so I thought, well, you know, after we walk, whatever, we'll have dinner or we'll have a little downtime and then we'll have dinner and maybe there'll be a little shopping and then there'll be some downtime. So I'll make sure I have like a little something to, you know, make sure I've got a book or make sure I've got, or whatever, my phone, you know, or like a little craft or something to do, right? I can tell you we had no downtime. I mean, basically, it was like we walked and we did take, you know, we took time during the day. We did have really nice lunches. We stopped in the late mornings at cafes. So we weren't like aggressive, right? But at the end of the day, when we got back, it would be like, okay, shower, dinner, bed. Get up. I had to set my alarm to get up, and I'm an early riser. But, you know, our bags had to be out at a certain time to be ready for the transport. And you know what else surprised me is how much I got used to it at the end, but just the packing and repacking, because every day was, you know, I had to have the one piece of luggage packed to go onto the next destination. And I was kind of surprised that you'd think it would be obvious, right? Like, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but between like, oh, I better get out my stuff or my toes, you know, it's sort of, that was more involved than I thought. But yeah, there was no time for any, it was just very like, we're going to walk, we're going to eat. And I was happy doing all that. I just laughed. Maybe I had 15, 20 minutes or something. I'd read and I'm go to bed, you know, but, yeah.
So it was the, how happy and fulfilled you felt with just doing such simple activities.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I walk a lot. I obviously don't use my backpack a lot, but I love doing that. But yeah, it was fantastic. So.
Let me ask you an important question now. So you've been on the Camino with a guided tour, if you can call it that. I don't know if that's the right way to the correct terminology to use. You've used a guide, you've used a company. Would you use a company again, or would you go independently?
I would use a company again, because I realized that I would, you know, the day pack was plenty for me. I mean, the only reason really why I had more luggage than I would normally have is because I did have that time in Lisbon, and that did add to what I was bringing. However, I think that pushes my limit. I did not want to stay in like a communal space, you know, in the evening. So I would definitely do it again. And we met a number of people that, you know, that were staying in the same hotels or pensions or whatever that we were, and that were also using the same service or a similar one. And some were just, you know, happened upon the same location, but without any guidance. But I felt that their fees were very reasonable. So I didn't feel like, wow, you know, if I do that, that's a deal breaker, right? Like, No, I would definitely do it again.
How do you think your Camino would have been different if you did go independently? Do you think it, for example, if you didn't have to book in advance, what could that have given you,
right,
rather than taken away from your Camino, if you didn't have to book in advance?
Yeah.
Because that's a question you often hear from a lot of pilgrims, so...
Right, right. Well, I think I would say, you know, I think that it depends, you know, we met, you know, a number of people. And I think, you know, because, you know, I had a given date where I had a flight in and a given date where I had a flight out. So it wasn't like you know, most people are obviously traveling significant distances and probably have a similar thing. But I didn't have cushion on either end, right? So next time I would allow more flex time, if you will, so that if I said, well, you know, hey, this is getting to be a longer day, or I'd really like to look around here or spend more time here. Yeah, on the fly, you would be able to do that then. And we met people who were just going on the booking.com app every day, picking at a hotel. I think that during this time when we went, that worked out really well for those people because, you know, the occupancy was not high at these hotels, right? But I think that if you were going during a more busy time, like during the summer, I think it would be challenging. You know, I think I felt like I had enough things to concern myself with, and feeling that having those items off of my list of things to think about was comforting to me.
I think you make a really, really good point. And I think what I'm taking from what you're saying is a patchwork approach is actually probably recommendable, because like you say, maybe if you think a guided Camino is best for you, that you would do a guided Camino, but you would have some time, some more flexible time before when you arrive and when you leave. So you've got a bit more flexibility in the time you spend on the road. But also depends on the time of year that you go as well. I mean, what you say is very true. My wife and I did the Camino Inglés, the English way, in the summer. And every single town, city, whatever village we turn up to was pretty much full. There was, there were certainly no places in the albergues, in the communal albergues, in the municipal, the basic ones, and even the private ones. They were often fully booked as well. So in the end, we kind of against my greatest wishes and will that we had to book some of them in advance, because it was becoming apparent that actually in the summertime it wasn't there, the availability wasn't there. Right. But if you're going in autumn or winter, or maybe springtime, then there's probably going to be more availability. So I guess it depends on what time you go, what you want at your Camino, how experienced you are. But I understand what you said, that you had enough on your plate anyway, that actually it was great that's when a guided Camino that can be great, because it can take all of those decisions off of your hands, and you just can occupy yourself with walking and having a great time, which is obviously one of the advantages of doing a guided Camino. So you've brought a really interesting angle there for the listeners, because there will be some people listening thinking, do I go on my own? Do I go with a guide? And they've just heard reasons to go with a guide there, which is great. And we want to cover all angles here. So what would you do differently if you were to, when you return, should I say, not were you to return, when you return?
I think that I would get a new backpack, for one thing.
On that backpack? What changes would you make? What would you want?
Well, so this backpack, it was waterproof. I had gotten it a few years ago for traveling. It's a nice backpack. It's Patagonia. And it's attached in the front at the top, but it doesn't have a waist fastener. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I felt like the waist fastener would be a game changer for me. And then also, as much as I really do like that backpack, and I would still use it for other things. It tends to be, I think it's actually called the black hole or something with this interview. But it is a little bit like I did find myself doing a deep dive in there a few times. So I think I would get a new backpack, and I think that I would try and print out, just once we were in, like, if you know, the town that we're going to or whatever, I would print out a map of just that city center area, so that, you know, there was some more clarity, because it would be like, you know, go here, go down this alley, go up these steps. This should be on your left, but it's not, you know. And I think that having a physical map would be helpful in that circumstance.
What about a hidden gem along the way on the Portuguese Camino, a place that you walked through or visited or stayed at and you didn't know it was going to be so amazing?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So here, this was not a place that we stayed, but it was a cathedral that was in, it was right when we were leaving. I think we were maybe on the way to Vigo from Bayonne, we were in Vigo, I think. And it was called the, oh boy, bear with me, Bradley.
No problem.
Da Immaculata Conception. Oh, Church of the Peaks, it's called. And it's in Vigo. And it's a 1968 sort of modern cathedral with this, it was just so fascinating to see it. It's a pretty amazing structure. And to run across that quality of a beautiful building that, of course, I loved all of the very historic works, but this, it just was just so different. And in the contextually, it really fit in the city and the landscape, and it was just really neat. So, and we went in and we got our stamp and all that. So we got to, and it had this amazing stained glass, just an entire wall.
Yeah, Vigo's a really nice place to visit as well. There's a, you know, obviously a big city, and it's near the coast as well. So obviously being on the Portuguese coastal route, but yeah, so lots of reasons to go to Vigo there. Brilliant. What about a favorite Alberg hotel or hostel?
Yeah.
You'd recommend?
Okay. So this one was called Toro do Rio in Cala de Reis. And that, that's the one I think that Monica also felt that was her favorite. It was an extraordinary property that was just outside the city. And it used to be an old mill of some sort, but I've never seen a property that had been integrated and restored so beautifully. It was fascinating. It just really, you know, it was just so verdant. I mean, you know, your eyes almost hurt. It was so green. And I'm looking at a lot of green right now in my backyard in Florida. So I know how this goes. So, but it was just exquisite.
So that's the Torre do Rio, T-O-R-R-E dot, which is do, I guess in our own language, Rio, yes. R-I-O. And that's the rural hotel in Caldas de Reyes. Caldas de Reyes. Okay. And that's, I think, 2 days away from Santiago on the Portuguese Camino. So the next day is Padron, and then the next day is Santiago. So it sounds like a great place to stop. And it was recommended as well by Monica during the last interview. Yeah. So obviously made a big impression on both of you. What about a favorite bar or restaurant?
Well, so actually we had a lighter day where we went and we stayed in Teo before
I know
we
got it well.
To Sunday. Yeah. And there was this very small hotel and restaurant, and it was called the Parada de Francos restaurant. And it has a hotel as well. And we stayed there and we ate there, and the food was just so wonderful. I mean, honestly, one of the things that I felt that all of the food was so extraordinary in Spain, I enjoyed it so much. And in fact, this week we're having a little reunion get together, and I'm making paella, and everybody's bringing something, and so it's fun to kind of relive the experience, right?
With that, of course, yeah. Can just the taste and the smells wash up so many memories, won't they? So that's the Parada de Francos,
yes.
And that's in Teo, which is probably about 10 kilometers or so from Santiago de Compostela, something along those lines, maybe a little bit more than that, but it's a few hours from Santiago, and it is on the Portuguese Camino. And yeah, it's coming up here on TripAdvisor, 138 reviews, and I think it's about 4.5 out of 5. So yeah, there's lots of people that agree with you there. So okay, well, good luck with making that paella as well, because that sounds like a that's a big job. okay, so we're gonna do what we call the lap of honor round, just like when people, as you mentioned before, go to Santiago and then they think, you know what, I'm having such a good time, I'm going to celebrate and do a lap of honor and a 3-day walk to finish there to the what was once known as the end of the world before the Americas were discovered and the European pilgrims were walking to Santiago. So short, sharp, quick answers. We're going to fly through. And then the first one is your favorite Camino blog, vlog, book, and or film.
Oh, it's definitely yours.
Oh, thank you very much. You didn't have to say that. But anyway, so let's go on to maybe a social media personality or account that may be worth following.
I don't know. you know, originally I was following a couple different ones, but I ended up kind of just sticking with yours. And then I took a break when it was getting depressing, and we didn't know when we were going to be able to get back on the Camino. You know, when our trip was so paused. I'm trying to think. So I don't really have a lot to a lot of other people to really suggest.
Well, I'm going to suggest one, and it's going to be Pasos del Camino. It's Pasos, P-A-S-O-S, del Camino. It's from a lovely guy in Portugal called Guilherme. I can't really say his second name that well, so I'm just going to say Guilherme. Lovely guy. He's doing a lot of excellent interviews on the Camino with a lot of different pilgrims, diverse group of pilgrims, and lives and breathes the Camino. And he's currently a hospitalero on the Camino Portuguese. So Pasos del Camino, look him up. Favorite food and or drink on the Camino?
Okay, so I love those padron peppers so much. That was something that I never had before. So I think that was probably my favorite. I also, the octopus, like that a lot as well. And then the albariño was my favorite.
Great stuff. So the octopus, the albariño, and the padron peppers. Be careful, because they say 1 in 20 is the hot mama. Okay, so one thing you didn't need and wouldn't take again. I think we covered this already, but...
Oh, right. Well, I had actually... that I didn't need. Yeah, I had brought a couple of yoga balls to, like, get out any knots in my shoulders or whatever. But I realized that, anyway, I didn't use them. It was just kind of like most of the floors, you know, you didn't have a mat. It just didn't work out. So I would not bring those again.
A quote or mantra for tough times on the road?
Well, I think that, the Ed Sheeran song, Castle on the Hill?
I do.
Okay. So at one point it says, I'm on my way. And anyway, I sort of that phrase, you know, I'm on my way. It just, that lighthearted spirit and of sort of a positivity of moving forward. That's the only thing that... that I would think of, really.
It's powerful. It's powerful. I like it. It's just like the Camino motto, move forward with courage, ultra, you know, I'm on my way. A guilty pleasure you carried with you, perhaps?
Yeah, I had a puffy vest that actually was really nice for layering and stuff like that. But it was kind of a nicer one. So it wasn't like, you felt like, okay, if you put that on at the end of the day, you felt like, okay, I'm not like still on the Camino or whatever. So, yeah.
A Spanish product or shop, it could be a Portuguese product or shop actually, that came in useful.
Right. So the Spanish product, I actually learned about this in the States. It's marketed here now, but it's a sunscreen. Called ISDIN, ISDIN. And I knew that it was made overseas or whatever. And so I was really trying to, you know, make sure that I had a lot of sun protection. But I did buy more when I was there and used it. I think it's a good product.
A Camino app or internet resource you use before, after, or during the Camino?
Well, I think I would have to say Camino Ways, that I use that.
So they've got, they're not only doing guided tours or guided Caminos, they've got an app as well.
Well, what they had, like before, right before we were leaving, they had sent a thing where you could download on your Google Maps where, you know, and see where your trail went, right? which worked for the most part. You know, there were always still some dodgy areas, right? Like I said, like when things got congested in the towns or whatever, and you're like, you know, literally there's, you know, what's this phrase? You know, all roads lead to Rome. It was sort of like that, you know, kind of like, look, you could go this way or you could go this way, but basically they're both going in this direction, and whether you're one block over or not, does it really matter at some point?
There's musical detours.
But they did send us what I would describe as specific and helpful information about, you know, what to bring. And most of that stuff I was pretty familiar with.
I remember being on the Camino Inglés this summer, and my wife and I ended up walking along the road following the Camino. And I saw a couple ahead branch off into a forest, and there were no yellow arrows going down this road. And I thought, are they going to avoid the road that we've got to walk along? And they did. And I saw them come out of the forest about half an hour later. And they just said they used an app with this detour that went through the forest. It was longer, but avoided the road. And that app was called the Buen Camino app. So I'm a very anti-technology, anti-app, anti-phone person when I'm on the Camino. So I get, even though I know it would be very useful to me and I probably would have avoided that road, that's just the way I do it. So I didn't want to use it. But I, for anyone that does, I mean, I was like, maybe I should consider doing this. But Buen Camino app apparently is really, really good. And I saw this couple do this quite a few times, and they're telling me, yeah, they're using the Buen Camino app. So that could be a good one. Everyone look that one. And by the way, I'm not on any kind of commission or benefits to mention that. I don't even know who.
Sure.
I don't even know who's created that. I just know that I spoke to people along the way who were using it. So, but I'm very stubborn when it comes to that stuff, and I will only, you know, only use my phone if I really have to in an emergency. So, okay, we're going to finish, Betsy, with a Camino, what an outstanding Camino memory for you. I mean, it's in these special moments on the Camino when we might meet a character that we're going to remember forever and talk about forever. It could be someone who did something for us, and we're going to remember them for that reason. Whatever it may be, tell us a Camino, an encounter that's made an impression on you.
I guess that this could be, so not long before we left, I started noticing feathers.
My wife says this a lot. So that you're starting to put shivers down my spine with this one. Go on. I'm intrigued.
Okay. So, and it was just one day I'm on a walk in the neighborhood. I said to my husband, look at that. It was a beautiful blue feather. And I was like, gosh, it was so pretty. Anyway, and then occasionally I would see one again, and then on the Camino. So I started taking pictures. I felt like it was a sign of, I don't exactly know what, but it felt like encouragement and a presence and something. And so I took tons of pictures of these feathers, and it was a different type of memory of the Camino. I could tell you many other different stories, but at the end of the Camino, or toward, like, let's say our last day, the Camino, the feather thing took a different sort of angle. And one of the pilgrims that was staying at our hotel, she had feathers in her hair. I thought, more feathers, right? And so then we talked, you know, it was just sort of a sharing of information. She was very free-spirited, very, very interesting person, kind of like the type of person you figured would be on the Camino. I don't know, just very like, she'd really been doing it a long time. She was not someone who was coming in for, you know, a week or two. But I just, the feather thing was, it was just interesting. And so, yeah, I actually saw a couple today when I was out. So there you go.
I mean, my wife believes, and I don't know where, I honestly don't know, because I've never looked more into it. My wife believes the presence of a white feather means that you're being looked after by someone close to you who's deceased. And she always took that to be her nan, who recently passed away. And we saw white feathers all the time on the Camino Inglés. And yeah, it was, she was getting quite emotional. And I was obviously, you know, feeling the same as well, you know, seeing her well up. And I think on the Camino, more so than in everyday life. And, you know, people who listen to this and haven't walked the Camino will probably think I'm talking rubbish. But our thoughts are so conductive anyway in everyday life. But I think with all the energy that the Camino has and the positive energy that we all, the atmosphere that we create on the Camino, just pilgrim after pilgrim walking along and in that search, like you say, is, you know, we've not got it sussed out, and because we're always trying to challenge ourselves, it will be quite easy to just carry on with life and not, you know, not try to challenge ourselves. But we do go on the Camino, we are looking for answers often, and that those, I think the Camino is conductive, like our thought is for our thoughts, and our thoughts are so conductive anyway. So it's just gives it some kind of superpower to make all these things happen. And I remember we saw some kind of big beetles as well at the start. And I remember making a few very bad dad jokes about the beetles or whatever. And then probably towards the end, I said to my wife said, "Oh, I haven't seen any beetles for a while." I was like, "Yeah, maybe that, you know, maybe they've all finished their Camino or whatever." And then literally a second later, we saw a huge beetle in the path in front of us. And it's just an example of how the Camino is so, and our thoughts are so conductive, and the Camino is so good at making those thoughts become manifest. So I think what I take from that is when you go on the Camino, have in your mind exactly what you want to create in your life post Camino, because it's very possible that's going to make that happen. It's going to, there's some magic potion going on somewhere that's going to be concocted for you to make that happen. So, and talking of that, which brings us neatly on to how the questions you were looking for and the answers you were looking for, should I say, to the questions you had pre-Camino, how have things panned out since? I mean, you haven't been back long, but.
That's true. Have not been back long.
Still processing it all?
Pardon me?
Still processing it all?
I feel like let's just say that I'm so happy. I'm so grateful. I'm so thrilled to have been able to do this and to participate in it and to share that experience with my friends, and then to bring that back to my family. You know, I guess, but you know, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It was just rare and unique. And it's funny because I have a couple of friends, I'm like, really, they know of the Camino, but it's hard to schedule that into your life, right? If you're working a, you know, a demanding job that is more structured in nature. Anyway, so I said, well, let me help you. Let me tell you what I know about how you can figure out how to do this. So I hope for them that that they'll be able to make it happen.
Betsy, I want to wish you luck with and lots of fun with the painting.
Thank you.
Good luck with the paella.
It's going to be a feast. Wish you could be here.
I'd love to be there, especially as he's in Florida. I used to live in Pensacola. So, and also, the big question is, what is going to be the next one? What's the next Camino then, since you said you're planning it?
I'm thinking the Frances. Because if, I think that one, I can speak a teensy bit of French. I would be willing to try very hard to hone those skills, but I think that's the one I want to do next. Yeah.
So for when you return to the Frances, I want to wish you buen camino, and I'd like you to now suggest a song that can get you in the mood for your Camino and get the ball rolling to start booking it and planning it, and also to get other pilgrims in the mood.
Well, you know, the only song that I just kept thinking of is the Castle on the Hill song that I mentioned earlier. You know, I'm on my way. So while it's really a phrase from that song, that's all I got. So
that's perfect. That's perfect. So Castle on the Hill, Ed Sheeran, you know, when you hear those lyrics that you're on the way to the Camino. Thank you so much, Betsy, for your time. For when you get back to the French Camino, I'm going to wish you buen camino.
Thank you so much, Brad. Thank you for having me.